rather fancy... Well, I may be mistaken, but I fancy it was a murder case.
We were up at the villa early next morning. Poirot started to draw out the young maid, Léonie, on the subject of a quarrel she had overheard between Monsieur Renaud and his son.
I was dusting the salon and I saw him pass, and his face was white, white with two burning spots of red.
I had a mind to take another look at the scene of the crime. I fought my way through the shrubbery and found myself on the links, some 100 yards away from where the murder had been committed. A young lady was standing with her back to me, gazing out towards the sea. She turned and looked at me.
What are you doing here?
Cinderella.
When I last saw you the day before yesterday, you were going home to England like a good little boy.
When I last saw you, you were trotting home with your sister like a good little girl. How is your sister?
How kind of you to ask. She's quite well, thank you.
She is here with you?
She remained in town.
I don't believe you've got a sister. What are you doing here, anyway?
Resting, I suppose you've heard of the term. And what are you doing here?
You remember that I told you I had a great friend who was a detective?
I remember.
And perhaps you've heard of this murder at the Villa Marguerite.
You don't mean to say you're on that.
As a matter of fact, I am.
Oh, then you must take me to see everything.
How do you mean?
The place where it happened and the murder weapon and any fingerprints or interesting things like that. I've never had a chance of being right in on a murder like this. Oh, please.
I didn't need much persuasion. I told her most of what I knew. I showed her where the body had been discovered. I even got the key of the little shed and showed her the body itself.
Oh, it's horrible. To think that a few hours ago he was still alive. Do they know how he was killed?
He was killed with a dagger. It's in this glass jar here.
Oh, there's blood on it! My God!
Let's get you out of here. It's been too much for you.
No. I'll be all right. Get me some water quickly.
I rushed off to the house. Fortunately, none of the servants was about, and I was able to secure a glass of water unobserved and add a few drops of brandy from my pocket flask.
Oh, thanks. Oh, that's better. Why did you let me go in there?
Because you insisted. It was your idea.
I suppose it was. Well, I'd better be off.
But you can't go just like that. You're not well.
Nonsense. I'm quite all right now.
Won't you let me come with you?
There is nothing wrong with me, I assure you. You've been very kind. I hope you won't get into trouble for showing me things.
Don't give it a second thought. But you haven't told me your address.
Oh, I'm staying at the Hotel de Far. It's a little place, but quite good. Come and look me up tomorrow.
It wasn't until I got back to the villa that I realized I still didn't know her name. I found Poirot in the drawing room, doing his best to preserve his patience with the appalling Giraud. Monsieur Otte preserved an aloof silence.
What do you see there?
A cigarette end and a match.
And what does that tell you?
It tells me nothing.
Obviously, you haven't made a study of these things. It is no ordinary match. It comes from South America. Luckily, it was unlit. Otherwise, I might not have recognized it. Evidently, one of the assassins threw away his cigarette and lit another, spilling one match out of the box as he did so.
And the other match?
Which match?
The one he did light his cigarette with? You have found that also?
It is of no importance. The cigarette end is enough. It is a South American cigarette with licorice pectoral paper.
But it is only 4 years since Monsieur Renault returned from South America. Might not the cigarette and match have belonged to him?
No. I have already searched among the effects of Monsieur Renault. His cigarettes were quite different.
Tell me, Monsieur Giraud, does nothing strike you as familiar about this case? Is there nothing it reminds you of?
I can't say offhand. I don't think so.
Nevertheless, a crime almost precisely similar has been committed before.
When and where?
Ah, that unfortunately I can't for the moment remember, but I shall do so. I hoped you might be able to assist me.
There have been many affairs of masked men.
A man is an unoriginal animal. If he commits a crime, any other crime he commits will resemble it closely. The English murderer who disposed of his wives by drowning them in their baths is a case in point.
Where is all this getting us?
When you have two crimes, precisely similar in design and execution, you find the same brain behind them both. I am looking for that brain, Monsieur Giraud. and I shall find it.
I'm sorry, monsieur, but he insisted...
Forgive me for disturbing you.
Who the devil are you? What do you mean by bursting into the room?
I suspect he has every right to do so. You are Jacques Renault, isn't that so?
That is correct.
So you did not sail on the Anzora?
The ship was delayed for 24 hours by engine trouble. I happened to buy an evening paper and saw the report of my father's death.
Sit down, Monsieur Renault. It must have been a terrible shock for you to learn the news as you did. I hope you will not feel that we are too insensitive.
I'm at your disposal. Ask me any questions you please.
I understand that the journey was undertaken at your father's request.
That is so. Here's the telegram he sent.
Proceed immediately, Cherbourg, Anzora, sailing tonight, Buenos Aires. Ultimate destination, Santiago. Further instructions await you at Buenos Aires. You have been a good deal in South America, I think.
I was there as a child, but I was educated in England, and when the war came, I served in the Royal Flying Corps.
If you will permit, I would like to put a question to Monsieur Renault.
By all means, if you wish.
Were you on good terms with your father?
Certainly I was.
So there is no truth in the assertion that you had a violent quarrel with him on the eve of your departure for Paris?
We did have an argument.
And did you say something like, when you are dead, I can do as I please? I must request an answer.
I dare say I said that. I was very angry.
And what was the subject of your quarrel?
I decline to answer that.
Monsieur Renault, it is not permitted to trifle with the law.
I will inform you if you like, monsieur.
You know Poirot?
Certainly I do. The subject of the quarrel was Mademoiselle Marthe d'Aubray.
How the devil do you know that?
Is that so, monsieur?
Yes, it is. I love Mademoiselle d'Aubray, and I wish to marry her. When I informed my father of the fact, he flew at once into a violent rage. Well, naturally, I couldn't stand having the girl I love insulted, and I, too, lost my temper and said what I said.
You were aware, then, of the terms of your father's will?
I knew he'd left half his fortune to me, and the other half to my mother, to come to me after her death.
Do you recall an unusual present you gave to your mother? A paper knife?
The one I made from aeroplane wire.
It was the weapon which killed your father.
May I see it?
Your mother has already identified it, but of course you shall see it. If I might trouble you, Monsieur Beck?
Certainly. I will fetch it immediately.
In the meantime, let me put another question to you. Are you acquainted with the name of Duveen?
Duveen?
Bella Duveen.
It means nothing to me.
Perhaps you would care to read this letter. We found it in your father's overcoat. Can you give us any clue as to the identity of the writer?
I've no idea whatsoever. Does my mother?
As yet, no.
Monsieur le Juge.
Yes, what is it?
The dagger has gone.
What do you mean?
But I saw it this morning.
You saw it, Captain Hastings?
There was nothing for it but to make a clean breast of it. Under the circumstances, they were quite remarkably forbearing. Giraud even congratulated me on providing him with a vital clue. But it was Poirot's opinion that I dreaded. He seemed remarkably unconcerned and was more interested in measuring the length of Jack Renault's overcoat.
Most satisfying.
What were you hoping to learn by measuring it?
To see how long it was. Oh, tell me, my friend, what are your thoughts about the case?
To tell you the truth, I'm very worried about Madame Renault. There's something about her that doesn't quite ring true.
You are right. From the beginning, I have been sure that she was keeping something back. At first, I suspected her, if not of inspiring, at least of conniving at the crime.
Why?
By the new will, she is the only person to benefit from her husband's death. You may have noticed that I took an early opportunity of examining her wrists. I wished to see whether there was any possibility she had bound herself.
And had she?
The cords had been drawn so tight as to cut into the flesh. There was no possibility she could have done it. But still there was something familiar about the story of the masked men and the secret. And there was the little matter of the wristwatch.
What about it?
Now, it is time to employ the little grey cells, my friend. When did the crime take place?
Well, Madame Renault said she heard the clock strike two while the men were in the room.
And she was lying. The crime took place at least 2 hours earlier. For some reason, it was imperative that it should appear to have taken place later than it actually did. You have heard of a smashed watch recording the exact hour of the crime?
Yes, but the watch...
The glass was broken, but the mechanism of the watch kept going, which drew my attention to two important points. First, that Madame Renault was lying. Second, that there must be some vital reason for the postponement of the crime. And that reason may have been that the last train left Merinville at 17 minutes past 12.
So that if the crime appeared to have taken place 2 hours later, anyone leaving by that train would have an unimpeachable alibi.
Exactly.
Well, so we must inquire at the station. They can't have failed to notice two foreigners who left by that train.
Oh, my friend. Surely you do not believe all that rigmarole about the masked men?
But Renard's letter, the secret, and Santiago...
I'll take my word for it, Santiago is a red herring. The danger that threatened him was near at hand in France.
Well, then, what really happened?
Only one person could tell us that. Madame Renault. As I said, I suspected her at first, but...
What made you change your mind?
Her spontaneous grief at the sight of her husband's body. I could swear that was genuine.
And she actually fainted.
Oh, it was no fake. Tell me, Hastings, what is the explanation of the open door?
I suppose it was simply an oversight.
There is something about it which for the moment I cannot fathom. But one thing I am fairly certain of, they left by the window.
But there were no footprints in the flower bed underneath.
No, and there ought to have been. In the other bed, there were plentiful impressions of the gardener's big hobnail boots. In the other, none. Someone had smoothed over the surface with a rake. But I must be going. The train to Paris leaves at 2:25.
Why are you going to Paris?
To look for the murderer of Monsieur Renault. I shan't be away long. Stay here and cultivate the society of Jacques Renault.
Which reminds me, how did you know about him and Marthe Debreuil?
Oh, my friend, I know human nature. Throw together a boy like young Renault and a beautiful girl like Mademoiselle Marthe, and the result is almost inevitable. And remember, she has anxious eyes.
What do you mean by that?
I fancy, my friend, that we shall see before long. But I must be on my way.
I'll come and see you all.
You'll do nothing of the sort. I forbid it.
There was nothing I could say to that, so I let him go. I strolled down to the beach in the hope that Cinderella might be disporting herself in some wonderful costume. But there was no sign of her. So I decided to try the Hotel du Phare.
I'm sorry, but there's no such lady staying here.
But the lady told me herself.
She must have made a mistake. There's been another gentleman here inquiring for her. He described her in just the same way.
What was he like?
He was a small, plump gentleman, very neat, with a stiff moustache.
So that was why he refused to let me accompany him to the station. I felt angry and betrayed. Why did he have to meddle in everything? I went to bed that night in a distinctly bad humour. The following morning was heavy and overcast, and an unwelcome surprise awaited me at the Villa Genevieve.
It is terrible. There is a curse upon the house. They should send for Monsieur le Curé to bring some holy water. Never will I sleep another night under this roof.
But what has happened?
Have you not heard? There's been another murder.
Who has been killed?
How should I know? He is a stranger. They found him up there in the shed, not 100 yards from where they found poor Monsieur Renault. And that is not all. He was stabbed with the same dagger.
I am expecting the doctor at any moment, although we hardly need him.
When was it done? Last night?
I don't lay down the law on medical evidence, but the man's been dead well over 12 hours. When did you say you last saw that dagger?
About 10 o'clock yesterday morning.
Then it was probably not long after that. The body was dragged in here after the killing by two people. They've been careful to obliterate their tracks, but I can see well enough the unmistakable prints of a woman's shoe.
She is here, monsieur.
Show her in. Madame Renault, this is the man. Do you know him?
No. I have never seen him in my life.
You do not recognize him as one of your assailants?
No. I do not think so.
Thank you, madame. That is all.
The doctor is here.
Good morning, Monsieur Gerard.
At last. We will leave you to get on with your work. Come, Mr. Hastings. There's something I want to show you. Just take a look at this.
A woman's hair.
It was wrapped round the handle of the dagger. A long black hair. Does it suggest anything to you?
Well, I scarcely...
It suggests to me Madame Debreuil. But there will be time enough to go into that. I shall confront her and her daughter with the body. But there is something else. Did you look at the victim's hands?
No, I can't say that I did.
The nails were broken and dirty, and the skin was hard. They were not the hands of a gentleman, but he was dressed as one, and none of his clothing is marked.
Monsieur Giraud.
Well, Doctor, was I right? The man was killed shortly after 10 yesterday.
Monsieur Giraud, that man has been dead for at least 48 hours, and probably longer.
The whole thing was utterly fantastic. And then a telegram arrived from Poirot. His train would arrive at Merlinville at 12:28. And needless to say, it was late. It occurred to me that I might pass the time by asking a few questions as to who had left by train on the night of the murder.
No, monsieur. There were no foreigners. Very few people took the train. I would certainly have noticed.
Did young Monsieur Renault leave by that train?
Oh, no, monsieur. What possible reason could he have for arriving and departing within half an hour?
You mean that he arrived at Merlinville that evening?
By the last train, 11:40.
Ah, mon cher ami, how good of you to come and meet me.
Oh, I thought that was what you expected.
Now, I have succeeded beyond all expectations.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Have you heard the latest here?
Now, how could I possibly hear anything?
We must go up to the villa at once. Hmm? There has been another murder.
Another murder? Ah, then all my ideas are wrong. I have failed. It demolishes my theory. It ruins everything. Ah, no, no, it is impossible. I cannot be wrong. Unless...
Unless what?
Unless the victim is a man of middle age, his body was found in the locked shed near the scene of the crime and had been dead at least 48 hours.
Are you pulling my leg? You've heard all about it already.
Would I do such a thing? No, I assure you that I have heard nothing whatsoever.
Then how on earth can you know that?
I was right then. Ha-ha. The little grey cells, they told me. Come, let us cut across the golf links. I want to take a look at the body.